French are glad to die for love. They delight in fighting duels.
When you look for an image of a woman in the United States who transcends her role as an actress or singer, a household name, someone whose move makes headlines, every move, who do you think of? Long before the Kardashians, there was Marilyn Monroe. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today KCUR's Central Standard is inspired by a one-woman play about Marilyn Monroe at the Fish Tank Theater. Did celebrity diminish a human being in making a star, and is it still doing that today? We're talking about the phenomenon of female celebrity in the United States, then and now. How we relate to women in the spotlight, and what that might say about us. I want to start by talking with Heidi Van, who plays the part of Marilyn in the play Marilyn God. She's also the director of the Fish Tank Theater. Heidi, good morning.
Good morning.
As theater director, what made you want to do this play, and why now?
The director of the production, Jeff Church, and I started investigating different plays about Marilyn Monroe. The idea of me playing Marilyn had come up, and it sent us down a wormhole to find different stories about her.
So you guys sort of abstractly wanted for you to play Marilyn Monroe, not even knowing what play it would be.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, an idea had kind of come along. I can kind of think about the roles that I've played in my career. And sometimes when you are set with when you're given a set of circumstances, and you can sometimes associate yourself with the way a certain person thinks or feels or something. So that's kind of the idea of me playing Marilyn came up. And then we looked down this wormhole of scripts, and Jeff Church found Marilyn God. And it was not a bioplay. It was it is a psychological thriller. That's what we like to call it. And it delves into her mind, and she really has to dissect her own life in order to pass on to a higher plane. And so that's why we picked that play.
Well, so I'm curious that you had found some sort of, if not kinship with Marilyn Monroe, you had just been really compelled by some idea of her.
Definitely. I think she's an idea. I think people of the past who came to be celebrities during that time, there's very little that we really can know about them based on the technology that we have today and the technology that didn't exist then. And so when I found, I didn't know that much about her, to be honest with you. I knew what she looked like. I knew the movies she'd done, the roles she'd done, and her iconic scenes and signature gestures about her. But as I began to investigate her through the lens of this particular play, you know, everyone is human, and everyone experiences wanting to be taken seriously. Everyone experiences heartbreak. You know, people have ambition. Those are universal things. And, you know, those are things that I have in common with Marilyn.
Well, what has been your sense as you have done research on her and really fleshed out this particular role? You say it's not biographical, but did you look into her story in more depth?
Yes, it's not. It does have biographical moments, remembrances of her life, but it's not a straight bioplay. So scenes and those memories come and go. It's not just her narrating what happened in her life. That's what I mean by a bioplay. So could you ask that question again?
Yeah. What was it as you began to learn more about her life? You said you went into this project not knowing that much about her. Were there things that you learned that either surprised you or made her story seem more complex to you than it had before, when she was still just an idea to you?
Definitely. I mean, one of the lines of the play is complex lives need a final review. And you know, I had known that Marilyn was orphaned, but I didn't know how often she was passed around from home to home, and her complicated relationship with her mother, that she was given away. And then there were like a couple moments in her life where she was reunited with her mother, and then her mother had to go and be put away. So when we think of this person who we bestow with fame, and the term legend, beauty, men, success, like when you look underneath and behind that veil at the nitty gritty and how they got there and what propelled them, I think that's an interesting story. And that's what Marilyn God really touches on is, you know, what did she do to get to where she is and how does she feel about it now that it's the end?
In the relationships that she's known for, you mentioned men.
Mm-hmm.
She's in many cases kind of the not so secret other woman.
Right.
And I'm not sure that, I mean, I don't know. I guess I've never looked at that through the lens of thinking, man, this woman's got it made.
Right. Well, I think in that time, it was something that nobody talks about it the way they talk about it now. Like, she's not shamed for being that woman. Why? Because she's gorgeous and she's beautiful. So there's a set of like other circumstances that kind of puts her in this safe place to not be shamed. Whereas in contemporary society, like, she'd be humiliated and it would be a cross to forever bear. But other, you know, there's that incident of that being the maybe not so secret mistress, but then the play touches upon her second husband, Joe DiMaggio, and her third husband, Arthur Miller, but never her first husband, who she married at 16 so she wouldn't have to go back into foster care. You know, it's just like this woman, to get to where she was, it was not an easy path. And I think that's what makes these people interesting, is how they got to be where they were.
Yeah, you talked about her getting passed around as a child, and it mm-hmm. sounds like on some level that pattern kind of continued into her adulthood. And the idea that someone who had so much love outwardly just mm-hmm. among the public mm-hmm. could struggle to hold on to relationships behind the scenes. I mean, if you were to make an educated guess, do you think that kind of division between the public life or the person the public knows and the person who exists in their own skin, do you think that division is a byproduct of fame? Is something about the way we relate to celebrities doing that to people, dividing them up? Or is it just that being a celebrity and the things it honors, like beauty and charisma, don't necessarily make a person happy and can't?
Absolutely. I think that those are things that can be manufactured and created. And there's probably some natural gifts, that there are people who have natural gifts to get them where they are. I think that celebrity, you can be born into, inherited. And it could be created either by yourself or what I like to call the machine. I mean, there's definitely like a machine that makes stars today, whether it's a movie star, a political figure, or just a brand. But I think that in some ways there is a sacrifice and there's an erosion of your private life when you're catapulted into a public sphere.
Do you think that Marilyn Monroe was in control of her own celebrity?
I think she tried to be. I think that the times did not allow her as much power as she might have had today.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that, we can go to the text. We can go to the text.
You mean the script?
Like
of the
in the book, yeah, or in the script. Her agent, you know, she said, I had to do awful things to get an interview. Men made the conditions of my hire. And she also says at the end, like, she saw those movie moguls would perch and wait for fresh meat. So there is this sort of always maintaining what people want, and in that culture, and you know, it's what men want. What do they want?
Well, Aisha Hardison is here from KU's Department of Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies, and I want to hear from her on this. Aisha, when you think about celebrity, and specifically female celebrity, then and now, I mean, what are your thoughts about the issue of control? Who's in control?
Yeah, I also question how much control women have over their celebrity. Celebrity isn't new. We've always had a celebrity culture, but I think the way we engage it and our sense of celebrities being more accessible now is different. But I don't think the questions of control are different. So I think of Nicki Minaj, for example, as being a hip-hop artist, and the wax figure that was made of her in the Madame Tussauds Museum, and that she was the figure that was made of her came from her Anaconda video, and the way that patrons of the museum engaged with that wax figure, which was in a very sexualized way.
And tell us about the Anaconda video.
Yeah, I mean, coming from Sir Mix-a-Lot's song Baby Got Back and kind of glorifying the behind of women. And so in some ways, maybe celebrating that, maybe in other ways, objectifying that. And Nicki Minaj being well known for her hip hop skills as well as her physique or her body shape. And so that was what the wax figure emphasized, a kind of her role in that video. And so and that way, I feel like Nicki Minaj was very clear that she had a role in what the wax figure was, that she articulated her agency in that or artistic control.
Like, she wanted that to be the image.
Or I don't know if she initiated the idea, but she was in talks with the museum about that. And so she had some part in that creative decision. But she didn't have control over how patrons engaged it, right? And so, and the kind of sexual acts and the pictures that they took with it, that really sexualized.
Selfies,
et cetera, yeah. So I think in that way, maybe women might have more control over what images are put out in some ways, maybe management, creative decisions, et cetera. But I still think that that's limited in various ways. And then how the public engages that still kind of perpetuates the same kind of hierarchies, gender hierarchies, and power structures.
Do you think that there is a difference today between female celebrity and male celebrity?
Oh yeah, I definitely think there is a difference between female celebrity and male celebrity. And one example that I can think of is our expectations for our male celebrity versus our expectations for our female celebrities. And I think,
what kinds of expectations, like performance expectations or personal life expectations?
I think more personal life expectations. So, I mean, there's a hierarchy in terms of pay. We've seen female actresses talk about this in terms of what the salaries that they get. But in terms of personal expectations, I think celebrity culture is still very celebratory of male actors or figures still being bachelors and not being married, and that's not new. So you take someone like George Clooney, who had professed for a very long time that he had no intention of being married, versus other celebrities, female celebrities in particular, the expectations that they would still fulfill traditional roles of women, such as getting married and motherhood. So I remember Jennifer Aniston, after her breakup with Brad Pitt, she was constantly being asked, when was she going to have children, right? That the media was taking, you know, counting time on her clock, right?
Yeah, I remember that in the grocery store aisle.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So I felt like in those ways, maybe not in terms of performance, but in terms of their personal lives, right, and performing gendered identities, that there are still expectations upon women that harken back to traditional gender roles.
I want to talk about our expectations, especially of young women in the spotlight. And this is just, I mean, forgive me if I sound like maybe I'm going on a soapbox here, because I am not an expert in any of this. But as an observer, it seems to me that our expectations can create almost kind of like a toxic relationship with the women who are celebrities. Like, they get put on a pedestal. We're the ones who put them on a pedestal, and then we punish them when they fall. And I mean, I remember a lot of vitriol against Lindsay Lohan right around when she was supposed to play Marilyn Monroe, ironically enough. But it was when she was, you know, a very young, acting out, having legal and substance abuse issues, showing a lot of anger to the public. One paparazzi image captured a close up of her fingernails in one of these moments. And she had written expletives on her fingernails. You had to zoom in very close to find that. And I thought about that and was like, oh my gosh, you know, she knew that someone was going to scrutinize these photographs. She knew she was going to be photographed. She knew that she was going to be scrutinized so closely that what she wrote on her fingernails was going to be legible to someone, you know, in Photoshop or whatever. And it seemed to me that she was reacting against that level of scrutiny. I mean, here she is still an adolescent, and grown people are online, people I knew, mm-hmm. I still know, still love, but like wishing terrible things on her. Mm-hmm. And if she were a neighborhood kid going through a hard time like that, on the other hand, everyone would be saying, oh, how sad this is. She's shown so much promise, and look what's going on with her now.
Mm-hmm. I think that Lindsay Lohan, she was one of my muses for a really long time, and David Wayne Reed and Bess Wallerstein and I wrote a couple plays based on a fictitious character called Brinsey Cardilton that was all of them wrapped up to one. But the interesting point about like the adolescence and growing up as celebrity, like when we were growing up, we didn't know kind of the depth of what our contemporary celebrities, young kids that were on TV were doing until it was in People magazine or until much later when they had problems, because the spotlight wasn't as bright. Today, with TMZ and the social media, like the spotlight, whether it's on, you know, even Justin Bieber, it doesn't go away. So they illuminate these, you know, expletives written on fingernails, which probably a lot of other kids do, but it doesn't become a conversation and, you know, people spouting hatred against another person. I think that the spotlight takes away the humanness and it turns them into a caricature.
I agree with that. And we can also throw Britney Spears in this conversation, yeah. too. Mm-hmm. But I also, I guess I also question how much of that is replicated in everyday life. I mean, I think even teens who are not teen stars, who are not on the Disney Channel, who are not in pop music, that they also have a certain type of scrutiny on them all the time due to social media, right?
Which makes everyone a little mini celebrity in their own junior
right.
high.
In their mm-hmm. own junior high, right. And the damage that cyberbullying, right? I mean, so there is, I feel like there is a kind of erosion of the lines between public and private, even in the average person's everyday life, that there's very much a sense of like what it means to go to school and have certain clothes and to date certain people and to have a certain haircut, etc., that I think also garners a certain type of scrutiny. Obviously not in the same sense of Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears, for example, but I still do think that even the average person has a sense of a public self mm-hmm. that will be judged and evaluated, particularly in a certain age group of teenagers.
And that you might, I mean, you're talking about an erosion between private and public, but in a way it's also like that there become two selves. Depending on who you are and how you manage that, like the mm-hmm. self that is thinking and feeling and the self that is out there interacting with, if not the public, at least some small public.
Yeah. And that way, too, that there's a division or a distinction between the two. But I almost feel like even an increased desire to have a very public self, right, to always tweet about what you're doing in any given moment, or to post about it, or to document it in pictures, etc., that feels a little different. That seems to distinguish this cultural moment versus, mm-hmm. you know, when Marilyn Monroe was an icon, for example. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Britney Spears in the context of thinking about how celebrity affects young women in particular. And I think, you know, the public also, much like Lindsay Lohan, watched a downfall, a rise and a fall of Britney Spears, and is now sort of anticipating whether she's going to, quote unquote, redeem herself. But I want to play a little clip from a commercial that came out in the early 2000s. Britney Spears had not yet had her downfall. She's still very young. It's a Pepsi commercial. And in this commercial, she is dancing around with a Pepsi and backup singers, backup dancers, in a midriff exposing shirt and tight pants. And Bob Dole, who was then very recently a presidential candidate, is sitting there with his dog watching this video of Britney Spears dancing. And we're going to hear the very end of this commercial.
Easy, boy.
if a grown man responded to a young woman in that way in the private sphere, the reaction would be one thing. I saw this and was totally shocked, but I don't remember any public outrage. And maybe my sense that maybe there should have been that is misplaced, but I'm curious, Aisha, as someone who studies sort of like the creation of these public images, what do you hear? What do you think about this?
I hear an adult male having a sexual response to a teenage girl performing on a commercial. And not only is her sexuality so palpable, but the dog is also responding, which is kind of ironic in a way, a male response and a dog's response, mm-hmm. Which may allow for some type of criticism of his response. It's the dog responding, not the man responding, supposedly. But yeah, I see that as definitely a kind of male response, and that the kind of male gaze on a young woman's body. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's selling Pepsi, but she's also selling a little more.
I guess a couple of years later, when she is angrily reacting to paparazzi, shaving her head, doing all of these things that people are saying are evidence of her kind of losing her mind or having what has been in reputable media sources called a meltdown, mm-hmm. which I also personally happen to think is a pretty gendered term. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to imagine someone describing a mental health episode of a male as a meltdown.
Right.
That's
mm-hmm.
just me. But mm-hmm. So everyone was so surprised. But I think, I mean, when you look at a commercial like this and that someone is represented like this in national media, is it surprising? I mean, does the way we treat celebrities, especially young female celebrities, do you think that that contributes to the ways that they can sometimes act out?
I do. Her reaction was also physical. She shaved her head. Amanda Bynes, that she mm-hmm. start taking all of those photographs. I mean, they live, and celebrities live in these images and pictures and moving things. And so I think the one thing that is a direct target is to change their image, because their image might have been fabricated or prescribed upon them. And so,
or just like, I'm going to stop giving you what you want.
I'm going to stop giving you what you want. Now maybe you'll leave me alone.
I also think those images are very static. So once you become an icon, I think fans want to see you maintain that mm-hmm. image in some way. I think for younger celebrity women that's difficult as they're growing older.
Right.
So I feel like a lot of the transition is trying to construct some type of sexual identity that's not allowed for them when they're on the Disney Channel, for example. And to add to Britney Spears, I think some of the backlash is in response to her having children, right? That she's become an adult woman and children are the products of sex in some way. And I think a resistance to allowing, a struggle to figure out how to age up, how to grow up, and mm-hmm. how to have a kind of adult persona.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll get more current, turning to celebrities like Beyonce and Kim Kardashian. And we're going to ask whether race adds another level of complexity to our relationship with those stars. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today, we've been inspired by a local play about Marilyn Monroe to talk about the fantasy and reality of female celebrity. Do you think it's changed since Marilyn's time, for better or worse? Call 816-235-2888. My guests are Heidi Van, who plays Marilyn Monroe in the play Marilyn God, which just extended its run at the Fish Tank Theater until June 1st, and Aisha Hardison, an associate professor in KU's Department of Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies. Aisha, Beyoncé's Lemonade is her recently released visual album, and it's a really big deal right now. People are freaking out about it. What's the big deal from your perspective?
I think the largest deal about Beyoncé's Lemonade is the question as to whether she's reflecting on her own personal life in the visual album. So specifically her marriage with Jay-Z and the possible infidelity there, or rumors of infidelity. And given that a lot of the videos or the songs are thinking about infidelity. So I think that's been maybe one of the most sensational aspects of Lemonade. But I think there are some other aspects of Lemonade that have been talked about, but maybe not getting as much attention, that are equally important.
Like what?
So her representation of Black female collectivity, so that there are these images that are seemingly set in the antebellum South of Black women of different shapes, different sizes, different colors, different hair textures, etc., that are really aesthetically beautiful, and seeing them work together. I think the other aspects of Lemonade that's really powerful are her representations of the rural South in particular. So Black people on horses, or images of New Orleans that have a lot of power post-Katrina, right? So I think that's really powerful about Lemonade. And then we have the mothers of slain Black men in the last couple of years, right?
Like Trayvon Martin.
Like Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, etc. And so to see them. And so I think those are some other aspects of Lemonade that are equally powerful. And what is making people freak out about the visual album, right?
And Serena Williams makes an appearance there, too.
Yes.
It's so interesting. I mean, thinking about her as a female celebrity, you know, that she is this powerful tennis player. And I'm curious whether you think that our relationship with someone who has a kind of celebrity that women aren't generally as celebrated for, if that affects the way we relate to them. Is there a different kind of relationship?
Is there a different kind of relationship with Serena Williams now that she's been in Lemonade?
Or, no, with her just in general than with some of these other women we've talked about because of the source of her celebrity.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I have to say, I was pleasantly shocked by seeing Serena Williams in Lemonade. And part of that is because of, I think, the source of her celebrity being an athlete, and that there has been a lot of criticism of Serena Williams because of her body type. I think she's been masculinized in various ways in which people talk about her. And then,
can you give an example of that?
Yeah, I'm thinking of the language about her dominance in tennis. And her strength that doesn't always seem complimentary. And I think that has been gendered to masculinize Serena Williams in a certain way. And then on the flip side, I guess the kind of fetishizing of her because of her body shape. And so I think the way in which Serena is engaged as a celebrity is not always associated with traditional femininity. I think she's been excluded from that. And so to see her twerk and Lemonade, right, and at which is to see her as desirable or even sexual and kind of owning that, I think was really interesting to see her having her celebrity status being rooted in athleticism and strength and dominance in certain ways, but to see her as potentially desirable or as a desiring subject, I think is very different than how we're used to seeing Serena Williams, or even how people talk about her.
Or do you think that seeing her doing something like twerking and people's surprise at that maybe makes you a little more aware of what you're watching when you see other female celebrities doing that?
Well, I think there's a way in which twerking has gotten a new life, maybe, in popular culture, in which it didn't. And it was always there. So that's what I see as more interesting or fascinating about this whole thing, the sensationalism of twerking when in certain communities that's not a new phenomenon, that's not a new dance, but now it's kind of become mainstream. And so it's a big deal that Serena is twerking, but that possibly it isn't a big deal that she was that she has twerked before, possibly. I don't know. But
I think that's interesting that you bring up, like, there's a person doing this. And then that brings about a whole other conversation. Like, the celebrity puts even just an activity in the spotlight, and then we conversate about it. What does it mean that that person is doing this?
And the pleasure or joy or leisure of twerking versus training and practicing and competing in tennis matches.
Mm-hmm. So back to Beyoncé, I'm curious what you think is significant about people responding to Lemonade, which has all of these social issues that it brings up. I mean, she samples a speech from Malcolm X in this in this album, she is, as you're saying, referencing the mothers of slain black men. What does it mean that people are asking so many questions about possible connections to her personal life, like her relationship with Jay-Z, that is so much of the focus?
I think it's unfortunate, but I also think people, or we, or myself, are still trying to understand Beyoncé's kind of engagement with social politics. So I think it's new. I think the focus on Lemonade in regard to relationships or romantic love makes sense given her trajectory in popular music, that she's always made songs about relationships or
that's true.
Infidelity, or, you know,
if you liked it, then you should have put a ring on
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Or bills, you know. So I think in that way, that's very much a part of her body of work. And it makes sense that people are focusing on that. And I also think, you know, her collaborations with Jay-Z also fuels a kind of interest in her private life, etc. But I think only focusing on that aspect of Lemonade is to do a disservice of what I see her and her collaborators trying to articulate. It's a very artistic visual album, and I think she has evolved in that way. And so it is to, you know, only look at one aspect of her and kind of be more interested in her personal life than what she's attempting to present as an artist or as a public figure or a celebrity or icon.
We talked earlier about celebrities like Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears having sort of angry moments in public, sort of seeming to lash out against their own celebrity status and or the way that the public treats them as celebrities. There's a line in one of the songs in Lemonade where she's asking again and again, what's worse, looking jealous or looking crazy? And in that scene, she's smashing windshields and stuff like that, which is kind of oddly what Britney Spears was doing to a paparazzi's car. I don't know. Do you think that she is in some ways also reacting to what she has been and how she has been seen, or just the idea of being seen? Because she's not saying which is worse, being jealous or being crazy. It's looking jealous or looking crazy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, I question whether that aspect of Lemonade was in response to the elevator scandal that happened a couple of years ago.
Can you remind us about that?
Yeah, well, I guess it was security footage of an elevator in which Beyonce, Jay-Z, and her sister Solange, there was an exchange between Solange and Jay-Z, and questions about what might have precipitated that and what was happening in the elevator. And as far as I remember, Beyonce and I think all three of them did not have a kind of public formal response to this. I think Beyonce had a reference to it in one of her songs that came out afterwards. But I think since that time period, there has been some kind of interest or questions about their marital status, questions of if it's always stable or not. And in my reading about Lemonade, I think I saw people thought that this was her declaration of getting a divorce, for example, until they got to the end of the visual album. And so I do think there probably are projections on Beyonce of, you know, is she jealous? Is she crazy? Etc. But I mean, she's also engaged in her other songs like Crazy in Love, that there's some aspect of how we think about love as ultimate devotion, vulnerability, and being out of control in some way. And I think that's a trope in, you know, R&B songs and romantic pop songs. And you can think about it in context of Taylor Swift, too. Like, she writes about men that she's broken up with. You will be a subject of her song, mm-hmm. right? And so I think that's gendered, too. Like
this, but she's going to shake it off.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's true. There will always be someone else.
Yeah. I guess thinking about Marilyn Monroe as the person who inspired this conversation, is there when you look at a career and a persona like Beyoncé's, is there a comparison or a contrast to be made with the iconic status of Marilyn Monroe? I mean, I'm wondering, even in this control issue, is Beyoncé in control of her own image, in control of her own messages?
I think she is much more in control mm-hmm. of her own image in terms of her management, in terms of who she hires and who she works for, kind of like the all-female band. I think she's definitely collaborating with people, but I don't see her, at least in the way that Heidi has talked about Marilyn Monroe, having the same type of issues. I even think about Beyonce's kind of control of pictures that are put out about her, how she was very careful about images of her child, and even kind of her refusal to explicitly talk about her relationship. So I think in that way, she's much more thoughtful and savvy about her public persona than maybe what might have been permissible or allowed. I mean, Beyonce doesn't have to work to get interviews in the way that you said Marilyn Monroe did. And so I think in that way, it is different.
Yeah. I believe that Beyonce has power. And she has power over her business and the way her business is structured. And in the 40s and 50s and 60s, that didn't exist. Towards the end, Marilyn got her own company, her own production company that would then hire her out, and then money would come back in. So towards the end, she had a business structure that would support that. But I think that today, the way that contemporary celebrities work, having that power of their finances and their image and their staff is very different than it was before.
Hold that thought, Heidi Van. We will return to this conversation about the changing ways of female celebrity when we return. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. I'm Gina Kaufman. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm here with Heidi Van, who is the director of the Fish Tank Theater, and who is also the solo performer in the play Marilyn God that's up there until June 1st, right, Heidi?
That's correct. June 1st is Marilyn's 90th birthday.
Oh, wow.
So that's why we picked June 1st.
And Aisha Hardison is here with us from KU's Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies Department. Hi, Aisha.
Hi.
So we've been talking about female celebrity, and we've gotten very current. We haven't talked about the Kardashians yet. And we have to, right?
We should.
I'm curious. You know, people talk about how they are famous just for being famous, nothing else. And that's, I mean, I'm not super well educated in their trajectory, but I have been wondering whether that is a dismissal or if there's truth to that, if they're really famous just for being famous.
I remember, was it not when Kim Kardashian was Paris Hilton's friend? And it was like, who is that girl in those jeans? Mm. And maybe it started before that, but that's when I first noticed Kim Kardashian. And then all of a sudden, the show and within the show was the sex tape.
I think the sex tape preceded
the show. The show? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. But I'm not versed in the timeline of the Kardashians either. But I mean, either way, who... Mm-hmm. is the girl in those jeans says that her celebrity is based on her body.
Mm-hmm.
The critique that people have of the celebrity that the Kardashians possess, I mean, no one can be famous without the public's participation. That it seems really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. And part of that is kind of idealizing the Kardashians. And I think a lot of that is mm-hmm. a lot of hate, too. Mm-hmm. I feel that... I see a lot of pushback or body shaming of her, just as much as there's a kind of focus on her body too.
Well, they also took the ball and ran with it. I mean, she was famous for being noticed, and then her mother orchestrated this whole show that would continue
a reality show,
and through that they launched products and clothing lines and other revenue streams to support their lifestyle that also had cameras showing them doing sometimes nothing, sometimes these business operations. It's really fascinating. I mean, that's one of the fascinating things about celebrity. It's like, who are they really? Mm-hmm. So these reality shows will give us a peek into them. But then as they've evolved from the real world, like the first reality show, which were literally a bunch of nobodies mm-hmm. who then became celebrities. And then
they leveraged the fact that they were noticed.
Yeah, they leveraged the fact that they were noticed.
So recently, you know, there's been all this talk about the selfie that Kim Kardashian put out and whether this was empowering or objectifying. People felt all different ways about it. I think that right now would be a good time, you know, thinking about questions like this, to bring in a caller who has a question about how men are supposed to respond to stuff like what we've been talking about. So let's hear from Chris in Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi. Interesting show, but you all are really leaving the men out of this. The question is, what are you expecting out of men when we watch these commercials with these obviously beautiful women who take good care of themselves and revealing clothing? If we respond to what they're selling, in great part, which is sexuality, there's something wrong with us. And if we don't, there's something wrong with us. That's the first one. And the second thing, and I'll take the answer off the air, is with regards to different ethnic backgrounds, I think it's helped in that sense, because when you see these extraordinarily beautiful women in these different settings who are desirable, men from any group can look at these women and say, wow, these would be women that would make great wives, great girlfriends, great whatever. And you wouldn't have seen this 30 or 40 years ago. So I think it's been a positive in terms of interracial relationships. So it's a great show. I just want to see if we can't get something about the men in here. So well, thank you very much, Gina.
There is a lot packed into what he said that we don't have a lot of time to respond to it. But we've talked a lot about women being in control or not being in control and this sort of thing. And we haven't talked about how men or just how people truly are supposed to be on the receiving end of so many of these images.
My goodness, that's a whole other show.
I think it's natural to respond to advertising that sells sex. I guess my question comes in with how does that translate or influence how you act in your everyday life?
Excellent.
So mm-hmm. How you treat women in your everyday life, or how you approach women that you think are attractive in your everyday life. And I think there's a way in which we believe that celebrities are accessible and maybe model, you know, something like that in our everyday life. I hear celebrities talk about how people don't respect their boundaries, right? Or feel like that people can touch them. And I find that problematic. If you're, you know, seeing whatever you see on television and assume, I mean, there's a kind of like mainstreaming of sexuality that then people attempt to translate or model in their personal lives that isn't always appropriate or effective. So, I mean, I think that's questionable. And in terms of interracial relations, I'm not sure if popular media is in fact challenging kind of beauty standards as we've known them, or maintaining or perpetuating them in certain ways. And that speaks to not only body types, but also whether Black women are included in kind of traditional white beauty standards.
Mm-hmm. Aisha Hardison, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Heidi Van, good luck with the rest of your time as Marilyn Monroe.
Thank you.
You can find out more about the play Marilyn God, which inspired this whole conversation, at fishtanktheater.blogspot.com.